This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Joe Biden's top national security aide has met with Saudi Arabia's crown prince amid long-standing tensions between the White House and the kingdom. The state-run Saudi press agency acknowledged the meeting Sunday night between Jake Sullivan and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in Jeddah, a Red Sea port city now at the heart of seaborne evacuations from the fighting in Sudan. The state news report says only that the men reviewed strategic relations in a meeting that included other American officials. Later, Sullivan took part in a meeting with the Crown Prince and national security advisors from India and the neighboring United Arab Emirates. Russia's Wagner Group appears to do a 180 on a Bakhmut withdrawal. VOA's Joe Ramsey explains.
Russia's Wagner mercenary group appeared on Sunday to ditch plans to withdraw from Bakhmut in eastern Ukraine, saying they had been promised more arms by Moscow and suggesting they may keep up their assault on what Russia sees as a stepping stone to other cities in the Donbas region. Ukraine's general in charge of the defense of the besieged city said late on Sunday that Russia had intensified shelling, hoping to take Bakhmut by Tuesday, but he'd have to do everything to prevent it. May 9th is Victory Day in Russia, marking the anniversary of the defeat of Nazi Germany in World War II. Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says there are no good options for the United States to avoid an economic calamity if Congress fails to raise the nation's $31 trillion-plus borrowing limit in the coming weeks. In a TV interview Sunday, she didn't rule out President Joe Biden acting on his own to try to avert a first-ever federal default. This is VOA News. Peruvian authorities say that a fire broke out deep in a gold mine in southern Peru and killed at least 27 workers during an overnight shift. The mining company says in a statement that a total of 175 workers were safely evacuated after that accident, which happened late Friday or early Saturday. It says the 27 dead worked for a contractor that specializes in mining. Government officials say the cause of the incident is still under investigation. Some news reports say preliminary investigations indicate an explosion may have been set off by a short circuit in a part of the mine about 100 meters below the surface. A law enforcement official says federal investigators are looking into whether the gunman who killed 8 people at a Dallas area mall expressed an interest in white supremacist ideology as he worked to try to discern a motive. The official cautioned the investigation is in its early stages. Federal agents have been reviewing social media accounts. They believe that Mauricio Garcia, who was 33, used and posts that express interest in white supremacists and neo-Nazi views. That's according to one official who could not discuss or could not discuss details of the investigation publicly. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has rejected his last chance to testify at a civil trial where a longtime advice columnist has accused him of raping her in a luxury department store dressing room in the year 1996. Trump let a 5 p.m. Sunday deadline pass without asking to testify. It was not a surprise, though. Trump has not shown up once during the two-week Manhattan federal court trial. Writer E. Jean Carroll has testified at length. She has repeated claims she first made publicly in 2019 in a memoir. The jury has viewed excerpts of an October videotaped deposition in which Trump vehemently denied raping Carroll or ever really knowing her. Black voters in South Carolina rescued Joe Biden's bid for the presidency during the 2020 Democratic primary, and he rewarded them by moving the state to the head of the party's nominating calendars in 2024. But interviews 2 years into his presidency with more than a dozen black voters representing a variety of ages and backgrounds reveal mixed views, especially between older and younger voters. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Russia launches a large-scale wave of strikes on Kyiv and across Ukraine over the weekend.
I'm currently in Kyiv, and I can hear the sound of air defense just a couple of minutes ago, the sound of either explosion or just shooting.
Plus, a gunman opens fire, killing eight people, including children, at a shopping mall in Texas.
I ran to the front of the store, and we're like, no, that's shooting. And we see the guy. There's this guy dressed in all black, wearing a vest, has an assault rifle, and he's just shooting at people.
And a more celebratory scene in Britain with street parties and a star-studded concert following King Charles's coronation. Today is Monday, May 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Lori London in Washington. At least five people were wounded in Russian strikes on Kyiv early Monday as Moscow launched another large-scale attack on Ukraine. Three people were injured in blasts and two others injured when drone wreckage fell onto an area west of the capital center. This, as head of the International Atomic Energy Agency warned Saturday, that the situation around the Russian-held Zaporizhzhia nuclear station has become potentially dangerous. I spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv just after 1 a.m. local time. She described the ongoing sounds of explosions and air raids.
It's a couple of hours now that there is an alarm over Ukraine, central, north, east, and south. And this air alarm, at first, it was information from the air defense. It was Russian aircrafts in the sky. Oh, I just heard another explosion, actually. There were aircrafts in the sky with apparently missiles. And according to the information so far, at least one missile reached Odessa region, and it was fire after the attack. But again, we should wait for more details when the attack finishes and air defense confirms everything. But for the moment, we know that definitely something hit Odessa region, and there is fire after that. And then it was information about that attack continues, but not with a missile, but with drones. And currently there is air defense working in the city of Kyiv and in the Kyiv region and in other parts of Ukraine as well. But particularly I'm currently in Kyiv, and I can hear the sound of air defense. As I said just a couple of minutes ago, the sound of either explosion or just shooting.
If this is happening in the middle of the night and it's hitting potentially residential areas, we don't know yet, but that would mean that the likelihood of wherever it's happening, that if it were to hit residential areas, most likely it would be people sleeping.
This is the main risk, because even if the drone or missile do not hit directly the target, but air defense destroys the missile or the drone in the air, there are still risks that debris can reach residential areas. And of course, most of people are either sleeping or almost sleeping. And a lot of people woke up already because of the air alarm.
The other thing that we're hearing is that the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency over the weekend expressed concerns about the safety of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant after Russian officials ordered the evacuation of civilians from 18 settlements around the power plant. Do you think that's because the fighting is getting close? What do you know about what's going on with that?
Well, first of all, we should remember that the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant is the biggest nuclear power plant in Europe, and it's much bigger than a Chernobyl nuclear power plant. So if something happened there, it's a disaster of, well, of European and even maybe even the world scale, because it's really impossible to predict what could be the result of this. But the risks are very high since last March, last year, when Russian forces occupied the nuclear power plant. And then for all this time, we were experiencing Russian military equipment coming to the nuclear power plant. And even if we don't verify this independently, because there is no access to the power plant, Russian forces do not let anyone there, neither media nor Ukrainian representatives. So we only know what International Atomic Energy Agency head is saying and members of the team who are currently there.
Did they say what the reason was for the Russians' evacuations?
There is no confirmation yet, so I cannot tell you for sure why they evacuate. There are talks in Ukraine that it might be that Ukrainian forces are getting closer to the area in general, but Ukrainians do not attack the plant itself. So we don't have any confirmation except of Russian officials saying that Ukrainians shoot. Definitely we don't have Ukrainian confirmation of that, but neither international experts or international military intelligence, no one can confirm right. that Ukrainians actually shell. We should understand that always there have been risks and the scale of this risk remains very high, and it always was.
It's just a potentially dangerous and unpredictable situation, I imagine.
Mostly, yes. If you look at the location, the Zaporizhia region in general and the city of Zaporizhia is basically at the crossroad of the fighting. It's not at the front line itself, but it's quite close to the active combat areas. And especially considering that this is, again, the biggest nuclear facility in Europe, of course, there are a lot of risks. And unfortunately, the town of Enerhodar, where this plant is located, is very often under attacks and shellings.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. Fighting could be heard in South Khartoum on Sunday as envoys from Sudan's warring parties were in Saudi Arabia for talks that international mediators hope will bring an end to a three-week-old conflict that has killed hundreds and triggered an exodus. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma has the story.
The U.S. and Saudi Arabia say Sudan's warring sides are beginning talks aimed at firming up a shaky ceasefire after 3 weeks of fierce fighting that's killed hundreds and pushed Sudan to the brink of collapse. They say the negotiations take place in the Saudi city of Jeddah. It will be the first between Sudan's military and the paramilitary rapid support forces since clashes broke out on April 15. The talks follow concerted efforts by Saudi Arabia and other international partners to pressure the two warring generals in Sudan to the negotiating table. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The World Food Program will suspend food aid to over 200,000 Palestinians beginning next month due to a severe shortage of funds. That, according to the group's senior official for the Palestinian territories. The cuts in food may worsen if a solution isn't found. Rachel Judah with Reuters reports.
The United Nations World Food Programme says it's suspending food aid for over 200,000 Palestinians starting next month due to severe funding issues. It represents about 60% of its caseload in the region, and it could get worse. These were Palestinians protesting outside the agency's Gaza City offices on Sunday. Its country chief, Samir Abdel Jaber, told Reuters it will continue to provide food aid for 140,000 of those deemed most at risk in the West Bank and Gaza. But if a funding solution doesn't come up soon, it will have to cut all food and money aid to Palestinians by August. Jamalat El Dabour's family in Gaza is one of those aid recipients. She's saying that she's scared her family will starve to death and she doesn't know what to do. She doesn't even have a penny to her name, and she's hoping a local social help group will come through. Her husband is sick and jobless. Gaza, long under blockade by Israel and Egypt on security concerns, is home to 2.3 million people. About 45% are unemployed, and 80% rely on international aid, according to the UN and local authorities.
Rachel Judah with Reuters reporting. Another mass shooting over the weekend in the United States. 9 people, including the gunman, were killed at an outlet mall near Dallas, Texas on Saturday. We hear more now from Associated Press correspondent Julie Walker.
Terrified shoppers fled in panic after the gunman opened fire at Allen Premium Outlets. Police Chief Brian Harvey says an officer was already there on an unrelated call.
He heard gunshots, located the shooter, neutralized the shooter, neutralized the threat. We believe at this point that the shooter acted alone.
Video shows the gunman getting out of a car, shooting at people on the sidewalk. More than 36 shots could be heard. Mass killings are happening an average of about 1 per week, according to a database by the Associated Press, USA Today, and Northeastern University. Audio courtesy WFAA. I'm Julie Walker.
Well, meanwhile, in the wake of this latest mass shooting, U.S. President Joe Biden on Sunday again called on Congress to pass gun control bills. The president renewed calls for Congress to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, as well as to enact universal background checks and end immunity for gun manufacturers. There's little chance the narrowly divided House and Senate will pass such legislation, although polls show most Americans support background checks. Here are some of the other stories we are following from around the world. The Arab League agreed to reinstate Syria, ending a 12-year suspension Sunday, another step toward bringing Syrian President Bashar Assad back into the fold after Syria's membership was suspended during the country's 2011 uprising against the Assad government, a conflict that has killed nearly a half a million people. Israeli authorities demolished a Palestinian school in the occupied West Bank Sunday, drawing harsh condemnation from the European Union. Kogat, a branch of the Israeli military, said in a statement that the building, located about 2 kilometers from Bethlehem, had been constructed illegally and was found to be unsafe. And Chilean right-wing parties are projected to win a majority in the vote to elect advisors to draft a new constitution, marking a sharp shift from a progressive majority. This is the latest step in a years-long effort to overhaul the country's dictatorship-era text, after nearly 80% of Chileans voted to draft a new constitution in 2020. You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA says 44 metric tons of meteoric material falls on our planet each day. Among all the meteorites that have hit Earth since 1815, only 188 of them originated from Mars, according to the International Meteorite Collectors Association. A question about Martian meteorites that has been puzzling scientists for decades is, how do they get here? A press release from Caltech says that a large impact on Mars must have ejected surface debris with enough strength to escape Martian gravity. A new study suggests that the debris blasted from Mars with less pressure than thought. Study researchers found that it would take 30 gigapascals of pressure, or 300,000 times the atmospheric pressure of Earth at sea level, to send meteorites from Mars to our planet. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. The United Nations Children Fund, known as UNICEF, says there are roughly 640 million women around the world who were married when they were children. That's an average of 12 million underage marriages per year. And despite recent efforts to stem the practice, UNICEF estimates it will take some 300 years to get that number down to zero. My colleague Steve Miller spoke with UNICEF Senior Advisor for Statistics, Claudia Coppa, asking first where the agency finds the highest rates of child marriages.
Sub-Saharan Africa is the region where the highest risk of child marriage exists. This region is becoming a region of growing concern because the practice has changed, but very little. And unfortunately, this is also a region where we know that most of the new child brides will be also because of demographic trends. So this combination of little progress in reducing the practice together with a bulging population of young women, this creates a situation where most of the child brides going forward will be in sub-Saharan Africa.
You specifically identified sub-Saharan Africa, which I believe, according to your research, accounts for about 20% or so of the child brides. What about other regions around the world?
Well, historically, South Asia has been the region with the largest number and continues to be. But South Asia is also the region that has made tremendous progress in reducing the risk for girls to be married in childhood, particularly progress in India. In these countries, over the last 25 years, there has been a remarkable reduction in the proportion of young women who were married.
Well, let's talk about that progress, because one of the startling statistics that came out of your report is that while, say, like 5 years ago, the number of young women and girls entering into child marriage was 1 in 5, it's now 1 in 4. But your data suggests that in sub-Saharan Africa, it could take 200 years to get that number down to zero, 300 years on a global scale. So what is stemming the progress?
We know from historical data that countries that have made progress in reducing child marriage are also countries where there have been significant transformation at the societal level. We are talking about inclusive economic growth and poverty reduction. This is critical to eliminate the risk of child marriage. Very often, families feel economic pressure. Insecurity, shocks in terms of income, push families to marry off their girls. It's one less mouth to feed. And therefore, in context of insecurity, in context of crisis and conflict, or climate change also crisis. Of course, we also have to consider what alternatives exist for girls that could be attractive to girls and their families. And this is where economic policies that push for employment and job opportunities for women, they're really critical. And of course, investment in secondary education. So if we can provide girls with attractive alternatives, like the opportunity to go to school, to get a quality education, and then successfully transition into labor market, child marriage become less attractive as an alternative. And last but not least, of course, changes in mentality. I want to end on a positive note, because progress is possible. We saw progress happening in high prevalence countries, very populous countries, and there are a few countries that are nearing elimination, because over the last 25 years, that have been implementing systematic policies in favor of girls and in favor of their communities at large. So it is indeed difficult, but possible. So with awareness, with commitment, with engagement at all level, it's something that can be eliminated.
UNICEF Senior Advisor for Statistics, Claudia Kappa, speaking with VOA's Steve Miller. Hundreds of thousands of people lined the streets of London on Saturday to witness the coronation of Britain's King Charles III in a ceremony filled with remarkable tradition and colorful pageantry and watched by millions around the world on television and the internet. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
It's a moment 7 decades in the making. Charles became heir to the British throne at the age of just 3. Now 74, his coronation marks a new chapter for an ancient institution. King Charles III and Queen Consort Camilla were taken by carriage from Buckingham Palace to Westminster Abbey. Hundreds of thousands of people lined the route of the procession, just as they had done 8 months ago for the funeral of Charles's mother, Queen Elizabeth II. A small number of anti-monarchy protesters briefly drowned out the cheers. Inside the abbey, a congregation of more than 2,000 people, the royal family, kings and queens, presidents and prime ministers, and members of the public. Prince Harry, Charles's youngest son, attended alone amid continued strained relations. This was not a day for family drama, though, but for pomp and pageantry, deeply imbued with Christian faith. Some of the rituals remain unchanged over 1,000 years. Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, led the service.
The coronation oath has stood for centuries and is enshrined in law. Are you willing to take the oath?
The king gave his reply.
I am willing.
For the first time, female bishops took part in the service alongside leaders of other faiths. The Archbishop of Canterbury placed the crown upon Charles's head.
God save the king!
God save the king!
Gun salutes rang out across Britain. in a touching moment, Charles's son, Prince William, pledged his allegiance to the king.
I, William, Prince of Wales, pledge my loyalty to you, and faith and truth I will bear unto you, as your liege man of life and limb. So help me God.
Here in London, and in cities, towns and villages across Britain, people gathered to watch this ancient and extraordinary ceremony. The rain may be falling, but people here are determined that spirits won't be dampened. The King and Queen return to Buckingham Palace in the gold state coach, built in 1762. Above a sea of British flags, the royal family gathered on the balcony to greet an adoring crowd. Charles and Camilla face undoubted challenges, keeping the monarchy relevant to modern British society, facing up to its role in Britain's often brutal colonial past. The King has voiced determination to take on those challenges, an evolving monarchy steeped in colourful tradition. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And a day after that gilded coronation ceremony watched by millions, King Charles III and Queen Camilla had a much more relaxing time Sunday as they took in a concert featuring Katy Perry, Lionel Richie, and others at Windsor Castle. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Daryl Smith, we thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, you can follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourselves a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Burma's military regime has sentenced a prominent Christian pastor and ethnic Kachin leader to 6 years in prison after a trial conducted in secret on what the United States called military-led manufactured charges of terrorism, unlawful association, and inciting opposition to the regime. The sentencing of Reverend Dr. Hakalam Samson took place on April 7th, Good Friday, one of the holiest days of the Christian calendar. On May 2nd, the same court that issued his sentence denied his appeal. The United States has called for his immediate and unconditional release. Reverend Dr. Samson is one of the country's leading religious figures. He is an advisor to the Kachin Baptist Convention after having served for a decade as president and general secretary of the group. He is also president of the Kachin National Consultative Assembly. Reverend Dr. Samson is a renowned advocate for human rights, including religious freedom for people of all faiths. In addition, he is well known for his humanitarian work in Burma. In October 2022, he coordinated medical assistance and funerals for those injured or killed in a regime airstrike on Hapakant Township, in which 60 people died, and later he held a prayer meeting in the Kachin State Capital for the deceased. In a statement, U.S. Principal Deputy Spokesperson Vidant Patel said Burma's brutal military regime has targeted Dr. Samson for his courageous work. Reverend Dr. Samson has devoted his pastoral career to supporting peace efforts, drug eradication, advocating for justice and equality for Kachin Christians and throughout Burma, and facilitating the safe and voluntary return of more than 100,000 displaced Kachin people to their homes. The State Department's most recent International Religious Freedom Report on Burma noted, since 1999, Burma has been designated a Country of Particular Concern, or CPC, under the International Religious Freedom Act of 1998 for having engaged in or tolerated particularly severe violations of religious freedom. On November 15, 2021, the Secretary of State redesignated Burma as a CPC. The cruel sentencing of Reverend Dr. Samson demonstrates the appropriateness of that designation. We urge the regime, said Principal Deputy Spokesperson Patel, to cease its unconscionable repression against religious actors, communities, and houses of worship in Burma, and end the violence.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.